from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the security situation in Iraq is so darn good after the recent election, that when Vice President Dick Cheney made his unannounced visit to Iraq today, Sunday, he didn't even let the Prime Minister know. It was done without even letting the office of the Prime Minister of Iraq. That's how good the security is. They can't even trust the Prime Minister's office. No, it's true. The Prime Minister was expecting to meet with the ambassador, and he walks in, and there's Dick Cheney, because it's such a trustworthy operation all the way around. You know that the big story this week has been the revelation in the New York Times on Friday that the president had authorized the super secret, as it's always called, National Security Agency to wiretap American citizens without getting a warrant from a court as required by the, law. And the administration's excuse, well, first, was that we didn't do it, and secondly, what do you mean we did it? And third, sure we did it. What's your problem? Why do you hate freedom? Those were the three responses. But their basic response is they needed to wiretap American citizens to save lives. Dateline Baghdad from the Associated Press. Iraqi security forces caught terror leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi in Fallujah last year, but released him because they didn't realize who he was. This according to the Deputy Interior Minister of Iraq. So you see, we need to wiretap Americans so we can find out who Zarqawi is. The Deputy Minister Major General Hussein Kamal told the Lebanese Broadcasting Corporation Iraqi police suspected the man and detained him, along with other members of his group. Afterward, quote, he was released because we did not know the identity of this criminal, end quote. So why don't we wiretap the Iraqis? See, that would be the former Secretary of State Colin Powell was on television with in Britain with David Frost. They all blab in Britain. You know, it was Powell's former chief of staff, Larry Wilkerson, who went on the BBC to call Dick Cheney a war criminal. Wouldn't say that in this country. And saying something he has not yet said in this country, I believe, Colin Powell said, quote, I was deeply disappointed. This is about the weapons of mass destruction intelligence. Quote, I was deeply disappointed in what the intelligence community had presented to me and to the rest of us. And what really upset me more than anything else was that there were people in the intelligence community that had doubts about some of this sourcing. But those doubts never surfaced up to us, unquote. Among the agencies that expressed doubts, particularly about the aluminum tubes, was Colin Powell's own intelligence agency inside the State Department. No further comment required, ladies and gentlemen. He also discussed the situation inside the administration when he was there. Quote, often Mr. Rumsfeld and Vice President Cheney would take decisions into the president that the rest of us weren't aware of that did happen on a number of occasions, unquote. And he said his State Department staff drew up detailed plans for post-war Iraq, but they were discarded by the Defense Department. Mr. Rumsfeld and I, he said, had some serious discussions of a not pleasant kind about the use of individuals who could bring expertise to the issue, and it ultimately went into the White House, and the rest is well known, unquote. Colin Powell, always the diplomat. Slowly but surely it comes out, ladies and gentlemen. By the time of his book, yeah, it'll all be out. And Fox News was ordered to alter its coverage of the riots in France after a Saudi prince with shares in News Corp, the parent company, complained to Rupert Murdoch. Prince Alawid bin Talal bin Abdul Aziz Al Saud, good night, we didn't have time for the rest of the show because the name was so long, told a conference in Dubai he had telephoned Murdoch after seeing a line on the Fox News channel describing the disturbances as, quote, Muslim riots, unquote. Quote, I picked up the phone and called Murdoch and said that I was speaking not as a shareholder, but as a viewer of Fox. I said, these are not Muslim riots, they are riots, the prince said. He investigated the matter and called Fox, and within half an hour it was changed from Muslim riots to civil riots, unquote. The prince said his intervention had been an example of how Muslim people can change the portrayal of their religion in the Western media. And it's not the first time he's admitted to trying to influence Murdoch's coverage of sensitive issues. See, this is my mistake, ladies and gentlemen. My disputes with Fox, I depended on lawyers. I need to call a Saudi prince next time. Anyway, this is almost the end of the year. And what a heck of a year it's been. And last week we covered a lot of the media stories that occurred during the year. But we lead off this week with one of the biggest, the departure of Dan Rather as the anchor of the CBS Evening News, a real bad day at BlackRock, as we begin this week's second part of
The Year in Rebuke.
He's feeding the package in about 10 minutes. We should be able to... Hold on. Yes, Mr. Rather... Do you need something?
Yes, I do. Please, Roberta. Do you folks out here in the bullpen have any more packing boxes? I'm five cartons into an eight-carton job.
Yeah, there's only one of me here right now, but as soon as I get this piece screened for broadcast, I'll see if...
Daniel! I've
been meaning to call you. Michael, sir, please, nothing to say, nothing to call about. Whether you watch me or Brother Brokaw, it's no skin off an armadillo's trousers. Sir, you are not the target demographic, huh? Sorry to break it to you, but thanks, Roberta. There was a time, Brother Wallace, when that young lady would drop the phone double pronto quick to get me a packing box.
Well, it was probably a time when you didn't need packing boxes, Brother Rather. So why in heaven's name would you be here on a Sunday before your last Wednesday?
Come on in, Michael. No hard feelings.
Well, I've got to revoice a 60 gazinza,
oh,
but...
come on.
All right. Jesus. This is pretty amazing.
Yes, sir. For the first time since 1982... the safari jacket is packed away. Only thing hanging on these walls tonight are the pushpins.
Look, Daniel, I'm not going to BS you and say that Ken Auletta misquoted me in the New Yorker when I said that you're not as watchable as Jennings or Brokaw.
No, sir, I know you better than that. Yeah. You're boxed spaghetti straight. That's what gave that quote its $2 wallop. In a $3 world. Yes, sir, on the money.
Look, Daniel, my friend, I've always known your heart was in the right place. Well, we've all had to make our compromises with the suits. Mm-hmm. You just made different ones than the ones I would have if I'd had to, mm-hmm. which I still am fortunate enough not to.
Gotcha, Hoss. Look, Michael, mm-hmm. everybody's got opinions. They're easier to come by than tetanus in Thailand. What we have in common, sir... is a dedication to something people on outside of this building like to scoff at.
Well, they like to scoff at everything inside of this building.
You and me, sir, man to man and boot to loafer, we still remember why we came to this place and what we came to do. And we can still do it. You know, you're still doing it on 60, and I can certainly help cement that broadcast's reputation.
Daniel, friendly note,
mm-hmm.
this probably isn't the best time for you to use cement and reputation in the same sentence.
Point well taken, sir, please. And yet, truth be told and damn the hindmost, we're not slinking away our tails between our legs.
No, sir, and I applaud you for that.
We're still doing the tough stories, the reality checks, mm-hmm. the money minutes.
Yeah, well, they're doing that one-hour retrospective on you.
Yes, sir.
Of course, Brokaw got a... 2 hour.
And I know you haven't been watching, partner, but in the last week I've gone back to introducing our commercial pods. First, please, these messages.
Mm-hmm. I remember the bit.
I'm a guest in someone's home. Salesman's going to follow me in. I owe my hosts a common courtesy of an introduction.
Oh, you're right, Daniel, you do.
Mm-hmm.
Look, as to 60,
yep.
obviously there are people even more overpaid than we are who get to decide about all that. You know that... when and or if you come aboard, Your problems will come from Brother Safer, but certainly not from me.
I appreciate that, sir. That's first crocus warm and next whiskey welcome. A lot of memories in here.
Well, they got a floor manager on overtime. I should get out there.
Well, see you at the 60 Minutes picnic.
We stopped having those 10 years ago. Budget cuts. So long, Daniel.
Yes, sir. A lot of memories in here. And in this box, too.
Memories are like rivers, Brother Rather. They both have banks.
Brother Corrald, I didn't see you come back to life.
Oh, I know you've been talking to Edmuro from time to time in here.
Well, not to be humping hound rude, but Charles, that's who I was expecting. I mean, cards on the table and legs on the floor. Edmuro's the only dead person I'm in contact with. So,
well, you know his schedule. He's spinning these days till at least 7, but there's a special kind of poignancy about an office, isn't there, inside this big impersonal building is a kind of a mountain shack. We spend half our working lives trying to make it like home, and the other half trying to go home.
All very well-crafted stuff, Charlie, but I guess I'm a little too emotional right now for sentiment.
Daniel, it's been a long, slow ride from Houston, Texas to Houston Street, New York, and we're not there yet.
Oh, no, sir, Charlie. Let's don't count Dan Rather out just yet. There's still a good few rounds left in his chamber. Care for a tic-tac?
No, thanks, Daniel. Not really concerned about my breath anymore. Now, there was a man we once filmed down in Cullen Corners, Kentucky. He played the bass mandolin every day for 53 years because he cared too much. He wasn't too fond of the Jews, but...
And you're saying I'm like that man, that I'm leaving 1 year early and one retrospective hour short because, like him, I cared too much.
Oh, he couldn't stand the sight of them.
Charlie?
Brother Corrald had to go tape some promos. That's the weird thing about being deceased. We still have to cut promos.
Brother Reasoner. Well, it's been a long time.
Daniel, at least. I got to be around for the first 3 rounds of budget cuts.
So Murrow really isn't coming tonight?
Last I heard, Brother Rather, he's on assignment. But having toiled in the vineyards of 60 over the years, I thought I had some possibly not too conventional wisdom to impart.
Well, go ahead, sir, please.
Brother Safer is an old lion. You need to get the thorn out of his paw. My suggestion would be a case of a first-growth Bordeaux, but, that's up to your assistant. But just keep in mind, Morley feels insulted by second growths.
No, I remember how he used to look down his nose at my Diet Dr. Pepper. That's a good suggestion, Brother Reasoner.
I mean, look, Daniel, you may not want to fit in there. I know I wouldn't. I mean, when I was at 60 Minutes, the secretaries wore the earrings, not the anchors.
Well, in fairness, Leslie Stahl is always...
I mean, Ed Bradley.
Yes, sir, Brother Bradley.
What's the message he's sending with that? Or do I want to know?
Sir, there are network presidents who wear an earring when they meet with talent and take it off when they huddle with the suits. Maybe Brother Bradley regards the audience as talent.
As for Andy Rooney, he loves antique watches.
And what's Leslie Stahl's preferred china pattern? I mean, Brother Reasoner, if I didn't know better, I'd swear you were running some kind of bridal registry for 60 Minutes anchors.
Hey, look, Daniel, being dead is bad enough without having to endure withering sarcasm.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Please. This is an emotional time for me. I've got 3 more chances to say reporting for CBS News on live television, and then only our fearless leader knows. I'm going to miss this place, Harry.
Sure you will, Dan.
I'm going to miss the smell of... When we don't have grease paint, when we don't have ink, what does this place smell of?
Hmm. Smells like a room full of computers. And, Harry? Well, I should understand cut quick and paper cut deep. The hardest thing in the world for a broadcaster is to sign off. That and a pay cut. But,
Mr. Rather, your boxes will be up here in about 15.
Thanks, Roberta. From the bottom of my heart.
Sure, don't mention it.
Another big media story this year was, of course, the revelation after 30 years of the real identity of the source for Woodward and Bernstein's, well, actually, the source of confirmation for Woodward and Bernstein's reporting on the Watergate crisis. The name of Deep Throat, W. Mark Felt, one-time assistant to J. Edgar Hoover at the FBI. It was discussed by many pundits here on the earth and by a couple of folks up above.
Bob? Bob? Damn it to heaven! What do you need, Bob Haldeman? That's exactly a car.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Sorry. There was a little problem with double parking on the other side of our cloud.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you see, that's the kind of job you shouldn't be wasting your time on, Bob.
Yeah.
That's what the Cubans are for.
Yeah? The Cubans are still alive.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Yeah.
Ones that aren't, we couldn't quite pull the strings to...
No, I know.
I mean, we tried our...
No, of course. So-called angels who run this place just love to put on a big show of equality and fairness and all the rest.
Yeah.
But, you know, try to get one patriotic Cuban through the door despite some mud splattered on him by the elite media crowd. And,
he didn't do that well in his entrance interview anyway.
Well, screw him. Yeah, that's not what I wanted to talk to you about.
Yeah.
Sit down, Haldeman.
I am sitting down, sir. It's just in this robe. It's sometimes hard to...
It's felt. It's felt.
Actually, it's Terry, but it has a softer hand than...
Goddamn Deep Throat is felt!
Well, I'm sure it's felt. The girl who did the movie said it was extremely uncomfortable.
Woodward's Deep Throat. It was felt.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Felt.
Yeah.
Hoover's little Jew stabbed us in the back.
Yeah. I didn't think he was Jewish, as it turned out.
Of course he is, yes. Name like Felt.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
Of course it is.
I know for a fact he wasn't on our Jew list.
He wasn't?
No. I remember because you were pretty insistent.
Well, of course I was.
That I find out...
I mean, you know, that would be the first thing you'd want to...
Well, I mean, you know. Yeah.
So, I mean, you're saying that he was Hoover's little Jew, and he wasn't even Jewish.
Mm-hmm. And he's about 6'2" or something.
Yeah.
I mean, even Hoover told me he wasn't Jewish when I saw him last year over at the Improbable Residence picnic at the...
Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to go into the business of trusting Hoover at this late stage of the game, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, he's probably still insisting that Clyde Tulsa isn't, you know... Oh, sweetie.
Mm-hmm. Probably is.
Of course he is. No reason for him not to.
Yeah, probably true.
So... What do we know about him?
Well, he probably is. Oh, sweetie.
What do we know about this non-Jew Felt?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sees himself as a straight arrow.
Yeah, of course.
In Hoover's mold.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Most corrupt bunch of all, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The straight arrows.
Yeah.
You know. They'll sell you out for a bagel.
Yep. Even the non-Jews.
Well, yeah. Especially the non-Jews.
That's right.
Because they think you're not watching them. Of course. Why would you? And there's so many...
Didn't need money.
Felt.
That's right.
Didn't need money.
That's right.
So, we couldn't have paid them off even if we'd known. You see?
Well, I kind of knew.
Well, I mean, we all knew the FBI was leaking like a sieve.
Yeah.
See, I mean, that's why I was at Matt Gray over there. Cleaned the place up. Leak back to us, so, you know, at least we'd know what the leakers knew, sort of thing.
Yep. And I think in one of the tapes I actually said that Felt was...
Well,
the...
whoever said what, you know, the Buddhists say that none of it matters.
I suppose so.
Oh, I know they do. I went over there.
No, I mean, I suppose it's true.
Yep. So I assume we have our people out there tearing Deep Throat a new throat. Yep, that's it.
Sure. Buchanan's been out, Coulson, Liddy's been out, all saying he was a traitor.
Traitor, huh?
Yeah, that's a promising angle.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the Bush people don't have the gallstones to prosecute a good old-fashioned treason case.
And don't really think there's evidence.
You know, why should they stand up for old man Nixon? You know, where they can spend their time and their energy covering up for their own guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Human nature.
That's right. That's right. I'm up here. Mm-hmm. And they're down there.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Gersh, maybe he needs money now.
Who's that?
Felt. Yeah. Yep. Who the hell do you think we're talking about, Bob?
No, I
don't let this place make you lose your edge. Mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. That's what they want. It's probably why they let us in here.
Mm-hmm. Hoping we'd lose our edge.
That's right. That's right. So
does Felt need money now?
Uh-huh.
I think his family does. That's why.
The FBI pension isn't worth the hell.
They kind of pushed him to admit it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're going to clean up, huh?
Oh, sure. Book deal.
Yeah. Yep. Movie deal.
Yeah. You'd think so.
Well, sure. You know, the Jews running all over Hollywood, this would be a sure thing for their Rat Pack unit.
You thinking we could pay him off now?
Well, I mean, of course, it would be possible, you know, through couriers and blind drops and so forth. But I understand, you know, from reading the books about Watergate and so forth. Hmm.
Now, Ulasewicz has passed, of course, but...
Well, Bagman's a dime a dozen, mm-hmm. See. Mm-hmm. But it would be wrong to pay him off, unless we could find some money to do it with, see. Then, of course,
we'd pay him to say that he wasn't deep throat, that the whole thing was made up by...
You know, a modified limited 180, yeah. The whole thing was made up by Woodward, see? Mm-hmm. Helped sell his new book, mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. That's why I thought Felt was Jewish. I'm just remembering now.
Yeah.
Because who else would Woodward trust, you see, but a fellow Jew?
I could work on sourcing the funds.
Mm-hmm.
Woodward's not Jewish either.
Well, of course he isn't. That's just what they want you to believe.
You should have heard Kissinger.
Of course, what we really should do is just torch the fellow's house, mm-hmm. See? Mm-hmm. Like I always wanted to do with the Brookings Institution. Just burn the place down sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Henry was out talking?
Yeah. Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's the only thing he loved to do more than
taking out Jill St. John.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Henry,
He was very good. Mm. Said you'd talk about things like burning down Brookings, but we all understood that you were just letting off steam. The mistake the Watergate guys made was thinking you meant it, that sort of approach.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So that's what you thought I was doing back then, letting off steam.
Well, that's pretty much what all...
Because I kept wondering, you know, if we couldn't organize a simple little fire, you see, in the dead of...
No,
you
know, I know, the dead of night.
That's right. Then what the hell business did we have running a... But even at the time, obviously had to be a pretty sophisticated break-in type operation.
Yeah. No.
Did you say what I...
No, we just didn't think
no,
you...
No, no, that's fine. That's fine.
We thought we were protected.
No, I know. Play it as if the old man's losing it, of course.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Very smart.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this whole time,
mm-hmm.
Brookings is still standing.
Well...
But, you know, that's what you wanted to achieve, of course.
That's your right. Yeah. Just focusing on the good job Henry did for us.
Yeah, well... Of course. Yeah. It's not like he's Jewish, you see.
No, he is.
He is?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. Rosemary's List is just about 100% wrong.
I can have one of the angels work on that.
Mm-hmm. Seems like the least we can do.
Yep. Yep.
Nixon in heaven. As always. Where else would you put him? Ladies and gentlemen, the year in rebuke continues. And this year was marked by an odd and almost unremembered event in Hillary Clinton's campaign to remake her image as a middle-of-the-roader, which was most recently marked by her introduction of a piece of legislation to ban flag burning. Even though the Supreme Court has already ruled that such legislation is unconstitutional. But she's not introducing a constitutional amendment because that would be, you see, extreme. Anyway, earlier in the year, about halfway through much like we're halfway through the program. Isn't that wild how that works out? Hillary Clinton held a joint press conference to announce an initiative on high-tech medical information to help patients get their records more, who knows. High-tech medical information was all anybody remembered about the press conference. Oh, and the person she held it with, Newt Gingrich.
Something, the Harlem Years.
Great press conference, Mrs. Clinton, Mr. Speaker.
Thanks, Howie.
I think we shifted the paradigm a little bit. Thanks.
It really was at least a little special. I mean, you and me on a podium together, that's got to freak some people out.
Yes, the war of civilization ends in a photo op truce. Drucker would have liked that. And Deming.
Deming would have liked it?
Drucker would have liked Deming. Hmm. But enough big idea small talk. What's your schedule like?
Oh, golly, I've got Senate committee stuff till the cows come home, and the cows are slim and none. I am learning to talk like a guy, aren't I?
I meant in the next few hours.
Because the Senate really is just a big men's... Excuse me, Mr. Speaker?
Could I take you to dinner at the fabulous private dining room of the News Corporation building?
Only if I don't take you to dinner at the even more fabulous private dining room at the new Time Warner Center.
Well, only a mindless opponent of transformational change would turn that offer down. Let's lose our entourages and meet over here in half an hour.
I'm on it like stink on shinola.
You know, since my diet, the only time I eat food like this is when I have my occasional meals with Bill Bennett, and then he does most of the eating.
No, it's good. Mm. I mean, hey, they creamed a whole neighborhood to put up this place. The food better be good.
Mr. Clinton doing tsunami work?
Kind of an outgrowth. Hmm? He's on a golfing weekend with Bush 41.
Bizarre. Talk about your political odd couples.
Yeah. Like us.
Well, I know, but they actually ran against each other.
But they've both been presidents.
No, that's right. It's a bond.
The most exclusive club in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you and I had something going on out in that podium today that was a little stronger than James Carville and Mary Madeline mud wrestling on talk shows.
Well, there's the electricity of people knowing that theoretically, at least, we could actually get something accomplished together, a little more substantial than a spike in Alka-Seltzer sales.
Mm-hmm. There is that. And there's a certain something else.
The fact that outraging our extremists is the only way in a time of cynicism about politics to truly energize the moderates so that we can build the coalition essential to rewarding our extremists?
Has anybody ever told you that you're beautiful when you pontificate?
Not lately. Mm. But before the salad comes, let's try to figure out where we would go from here. Should we pull the trigger on the grassroots organization for the high-tech medical information technology project this week or next?
Mm. I think it's a little early in the public learning cycle for them to actually care about high-tech medical information technology.
The grassroots might seem a little astroturfy.
You're absolutely right. No, the public hasn't been brought to a point of caring readiness just yet, but I have. You know, neither of my wives nor my young mistress made me feel the way you're making me feel right now.
Mr. Speaker, well, they probably didn't share our passion for high-tech medical information technology or military readiness, for that matter.
No, they certainly didn't. I mean, obviously they didn't. That's why I had to dump them.
Then I guess we go contribution mining for the project? I mean, I can get this room whenever I want it if there are people in your contribution community that you want to massage.
To be brutally honest about it, I don't think, with the trial of your campaign fundraiser showing up every day in the middle of the front section of the paper, I don't think this is the most propitious time for aggressive dollar acquisition program activities.
Well, it's a good point.
And frankly, Senator Clinton, The only person I want to massage in this room is Senator Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, I've thought you've been hitting at something ever since the second amuse-bouche. You are, aren't you?
Look, I'll come right out and say it. Sure, the idea of being Secretary of State in a Hillary Clinton administration is somewhat tempting to me, given the odds against the Frister Santorum candidacies maintaining Republican control of the executive branch, but there's more to it than even that. Mrs. Clinton, the way my ex-constituents in suburban Atlanta would put it, I'm so head up over you, my balls are fixing to explode.
Mr. Speaker.
Call me Speaker Gingrich, at the very least.
Speaker Gingrich, I'm not surprised at this.
You feel it too.
I've just always felt that you and Bill were such similar people.
Well, for starters, I wouldn't be caught dead on a golfing weekend with George Bush Sr.
No, but you were both the smartest kids in your towns. You both battled weight problems. You both had adoring mothers.
My mom was great. She used to call me Nudie.
I know. I think everybody knows. So, I'm just saying...
Your salads? Who had which?
I'm the Caesar.
I'm the goat cheese walnut arugula.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but usually in a place like this, they know who ordered what.
Welcome to New York.
So, what you're saying is what, then, actually? Because if you're saying what I think you're saying, I'm missing the essential gist of it.
I'm saying, Newt, that I'm loyal to Bill in a way that so transcends mere monogamy. I'm saying I have special needs, not in the sense of Title X of the Education Act, but in another sense. I'm saying that we should keep this little liaison purely on a political level.
Uh-huh.
At least until, you know, we're out doing the grassroots appearances.
Uh-huh.
And then, probably even then, too.
Uh-huh. But a man can still hope.
Well, of course. Hope is the thing with feathers.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power, again maybe. Together they add up to Clinton something.
And meanwhile, the culture war raged.
It's a red-hot summer on PBS. Some old favorites are back with a new attitude. The late Carl Sagan returns with a remastered edition of the classic series, Cosmos. Beginning in July, welcome to God's Cosmos.
Billions and billions of years ago, it was nothing but a cloud of extremely dense gases. As best we can tell, that's where our universe began.
Or it was all created a couple of thousand years B.C. Either theory works for me.
The award-winning science series Nova returns for a special encore season. But these encores are anything but reruns. Coming soon, Nouveau Nova.
The dung beetle's place in the food chain is an example of the extremely efficient way in which nature operates. Or it's just another piece of God's mysterious plan. In either case, it's one heck of an insect.
Plus, Lawrence Welk classic episodes every night, all summer long. This summer, rediscover PBS all over again for the first time. The new PBS. Because your world is part of your culture.
And this is the show. We take a brief pause in the year in rebuke for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Didn't have time for them last week, but this week, yes, we do. Deadline Berlin. German politicians expressed surprise this week at reported U.S. comments that Washington had apologized and paid money to that German citizen that the United States government abducted to Afghanistan and held for months, mistakenly as a terrorist suspect. The case of Khalid El-Masri, who is suing the CIA for wrongful imprisonment and torture, took a new twist with comments from Interior Minister Wolfgang Schäuble. This week, Schäuble shed new light on a conversation between his predecessor Otto Schily and then U.S. Ambassador Dan Coats, in which Coates first told the German government that one of its citizens had been detained. Coates had said that Masri had received an apology, agreed to keep quiet, and been paid a sum of money, Scheibel said. But he said the U.S. envoy had not gone into detail about what happened to Masri. It mentioned, quote, neither the word Afghanistan nor the length of time he'd been held. Masri's lawyer told German media his client had not received money from the Americans and dismissed the account as an attempt to smear him. So, maybe no apology. Yet, a Democratic Party operative who anonymously criticized one of his own party's candidates for governor of Kentucky and the late Carol Campbell of Kentucky has apologized. Phil Bailey, executive director of the Senate Democratic Caucus in Kentucky, made what he believed to be anonymous comments on a political weblog. The comments were made using an alias, but Manning was able to... Lauren Manning, the administrator of the website, was able to trace them back to the South Carolina Democratic Party. After party officials were notified, Bailey admitted responsibility for the comments. Quote, I am sorry for any continued pain I have caused the Campbell family, their friends and supporters, he said. Dateline Paris, French President Jacques Chirac apologized this week to 13 people who spent long periods in jail before being cleared of pedophilia charges, saying they were the victims of an unprecedented judicial disaster. An appeals court last week overturned pedophilia charges convictions against six people, including a priest, after the collapse of a case in which seven other people had been acquitted the year before. In the name of the law, of which I'm the guarantor, I would like to present to you my regrets and excuses in the face of what remains a judicial disaster without precedent, Chirac wrote. Well, see, that's... what kind of nutty country do the French have where the president is the guarantor of the law? That is so weird. Prestigious St. Paul's School in Concord, New Hampshire, has apologized for faculty abuse of students years ago and asked any victims who have not come forward to do so now. Come on down! To the alumni who came forward and to any others who may have been harmed, I want to apologize on behalf of the school, said Interim Rector William Matthews. You know where they're called rectors? No, that's not why they're called rectors. Decades after the drug thalidomide was prescribed in Britain, leaving children with missing limbs, those affected got an apology and more funds. Diageo, the company that produced the drug, has agreed to pay more than $200 million to those suffering the effects of the drug and apologized, according to the Liverpool Daily Post. Dateline Houston, a social services agency in Texas, is apologizing for supplying a newspaper with a made-up story about a foster child who doesn't exist. A 10-year-old boy named John, separated from his mother since the hurricanes and living with other foster children in an emergency center, quoted as saying, there's no way I'll get gifts for Christmas. I don't even believe in Santa anymore. A paper in Brazos, Texas, ran the profile on its front page last month. Caseworkers with State Child Protective Services wrote the profile and supplied it to the papers. Child Protective Services has apologized. The paper has suspended its series and returned money collected to donors. Dateline Sydney, Australia. Photographs of a trainer conducting mock executions of young Australian swimmers at a military-style boot camp prompted outrage from athletic officials this week. The images published in local newspapers showed a trainer holding an imitation 9mm pistol to the heads of kneeling swimmers at a camp being held outside Melbourne. Australian swim officials said they were shocked. These images are nothing short of appalling, insulting, embarrassing, and are unequivocally unacceptable, said Glenn Tasker, chief executive officer of Swimming Australia. I want to stress that they are in no way endorsed by Swimming Australia, he added. Taylor, the swim coach, has apologized for the offense and the images that the images caused and said any of his squad's future activities would not include the mock shootings. A testing company faces a fine after it mistakenly failed hundreds of students on Ohio's new graduation test, leaving those children behind, according to state education officials. Measurement Incorporated graded 1,600 tests and failed 890 students after accidentally converting raw test data to passing and failing state grades. The scores have since been corrected. The state and the company plan to notify 272 school districts whose students were affected. Said the company president. Obviously, this was not what they paid us to do, and he apologized. Hwang Woo-suk defended his work on stem cells, saying he did create 11 stem cell lines and claiming errors published in the June issue of the journal Science were due to mismanagement and not fraud. However, although he's a national hero in Korea, he apologized for creating this huge controversy. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast, this one right here that you're listening to. This was the year that the administration decided for a moment, a mere moment in time, that the phrase global war on terror wasn't working. And at least one meeting of the War Cabinet was convened to deal with the matter. This is the year in rebuke.
All right, Condi, why don't we pick up where we left off in the last meeting of the War Cabinet?
That was the agreed-upon agenda, Mr. President. So, in fact, it's a very good idea.
Thanks. Since I'm over here on another secret visit to Iraq, I'd appreciate it if you could all speak up a little bit.
Donna, let me just suggest you turn up the volume at your end. If I spoke loudly, I wouldn't have this job in the first place.
You got it, Mr. Vice President.
Okay, we got all our ducks in a row. Let's get to it. I got Karl Rove going off a track next door, man. If I ever thought I'd end up helping Karl Rove keep it together, I'd never have taken this.
All right, Mr. President, from the previous meetings, I think we have a consensus that the phrase global war on terror has outlived its lack of usefulness and that we need to replace it with hopefully another term.
As opposed to replacing it with nothing?
Well, that was an option left on the table.
Well, personally, I think if we just stopped saying global war on terror and didn't replace it with anything, you know, our critics would they'd begin to notice it. We all know that nature abhors a vacuum, and that's one reason I abhor nature. So I think we do need an enhanced set of verbiage to work with here.
Okay, one of the problems I think we explicitorated last time was that maybe we're under-definitioning the problem, you know, so what's bigger than global? You know, see, how about the universal war on terror? See, just talking aloud here, but this ties in with our Mars mission plans, because if we find any terrorism on Mars, that's automatically included in our declared strategy.
Mm-hmm. Mr. President and fellow members of the War Cabinet, I think global war on terror is a slogan, as a tent pole, as an explanatory umbrella for everything we do or intend to do, has served us well. If we're going to replace it with something, I agree it should be more expansive, but I don't think we need to take on any interplanetary responsibility at this time of strained resources within Don Shop. Let's expand the other end of the phrase. I propose the global war on violence.
Dick, I hate to get pedantic on you from this distance, but isn't a war on violence just a little too oxymoronic to fly?
Well, then, and you get into the business of trying to describe the violence we're declaring war on. What about the global war on unforgivable violence?
Well, Mr. Vice President, I wonder if we really want to get into the thicket of forgivability here. And more importantly, I think we all agree we've gotten great mileage out of the GWOT. Mm. I think it resonated with our supporters in a way that a GWOFV just wouldn't.
Now, you're focusing specifically on the abbreviational aspect of the concept?
Yes, I am. You've got to have a handy takeaway for this operation, as our friends on the corporate side like to say. And I think GWOFV is a little bit much for the mind to lug.
Don, as I recollect it from our last go-around on this, you had some problem with the word war.
Yes, sir.
You know, me, I still can't help but think that that's gold for you folks, but
Mr. President, General Myers thinks it's putting too much weight on the military leg of the overall policy stool. Whatever we choose needs to...
No, it needs to better support the whole stool. I'm with you on that, Don.
Okay.
I think one thing I've earned from serious students of my presidency is a reputation as a strong and determined person who just keeps thinking in terms of the whole stool.
You know, the communists used to have what they called the struggle theory of history. Mm. The late Sam Yorty was very good on that. Maybe now that there aren't any communists around anymore,
That might be a useful package in which to wrap our product. Takes a little of the heat off Don's shop, emphasizes that this is an operation that happens across government. We're all in this struggle together.
Well, you know, I still hear the word class when I hear struggle.
Mm.
But maybe that's just me.
See, when I hear the word struggle, I think of hard work. I guess that's why they make different colored erasers.
So, Dick, this the meta metrics of struggle is that Homeland Security is in it, State is in it, CIA is engaged in it.
Well, we can hope.
It's not just DOD. I think given our shortcomings in the recruitment arena this last few years, that helps with the president's whole stool theory.
I agree. The president has an excellent conceptual framework for our work here, and the word struggle tees it up well. But our more serious critics have always made a point about the absurdity of warring or struggling, if you will, against a tactic. The point being that terror is just a tactic.
Oh, sure, Condi, but terrorism, see? Mm-hmm. That's a real ism. So, struggle against violence, you wouldn't buy either because...
Because violence is a tactic, mm-hmm, that's right. Mm-hmm. Although, I'm not buying and selling anything here, Mr. Vice President. I'm just trying to think through our challenge.
Look, I can only be in the green zone for a limited amount of time before somebody leaks my location to unauthorized persons. So let me try to cut through this maze with a...
Well, with a maze cutter would be my suggestion.
Okay, good. We like struggles. Yeah. Violence is a tactic, so make it an adjective. Now it's not what we're struggling against. It's describing what we're struggling against. Then you put an ism at the end of it, and I can slip into something a little more secure.
Yeah, I don't suppose anybody would go for violent terrorism. I mean, I know people go for it. That's why we're here. But I'm in the phraseography of it.
Yeah, see, I think that puts us right back in the box we're trying with a certain amount of urgency to crawl out of.
Also, it's a little repetitive. I mean, what would nonviolent terrorism be? I suppose internet hacking, identity theft if it's done by an organized ring of Islamofascists. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm answering my own questions here. Do we not want to come right out and say, struggle against Islamofascists?
See, I worry that just invites them to fake a bunch of conversions and then they say, hey, we're all Christians now. Stop struggling.
Well, Mr. President, far be it from me to propose an actual solution. I don't necessarily think that's my role here.
No.
But let me just unfurl this and see if anyone tries to burn it. What about violent extremism?
As opposed to extreme violence, which sounds like some sort of cage fight in Iowa. Extremist violence could work, though.
Look, we've got our ism, we've got our violence, we've got our struggle. I'm ready to sign off on it and hop in the chopper, personally.
I can't help pointing out that the acronym for Struggle Against Violent Extremism spells out SAVE.
Mm-hmm.
Struggle Against Extreme Violence spells out SAVE, but it's spelled wrong, and that would work against the president's education policy, I think.
See, that's great acronymics. Look, I think we've been sitting on this egg long enough. Why not go ahead and hatch it?
Well, I'm in.
Just for the purposes of being able to declare this exercise useful and productive, I'll buy in.
Me too, actually.
All right, good deal. See, we'll get the press people cracking on this.
And let's adjourn this meeting of the War Cabinet with the suggestion that for the next meeting, we come in with some ideas on what to do about Iraq. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Gotta go hold Carl's hand.
Thank you. exist. But reality TV is just starting to sizzle. Every week, from now on, until you just can't take it anymore, a new kind of competition. And the stakes just couldn't be higher if we met it. Two women. Cindy.
My son died for no good reason. So for me, this is just another battle to win for Casey.
And Deb.
Best way I know to support the troops is to win this competition the way the Lord wants me to.
Battle of the Military Moms. It's more than a game, and it's only a game. And the playing field is the whole wide world.
I'm Carson Ryan Carr, your host for Battle of the Military Moms. Right now we're choppering Deb and Cindy into a little competition we call Urban Warfare.
Yeah, I'm scared. I've never run a barber shop in my life, and I hear it's against their religion to get shaved, so I just gotta be strong.
It could be in Baghdad or at the Paramount Movie Ranch. But I'm the only one who knows, aside from our 50-person crew. And I'm not talking anymore.
I don't think they let us die because, you know, it's television. On the other hand, I did sign that waiver. So I just gotta be strong.
Two grieving but determined mothers. Two grueling months. Plus 6 challenging weeks with life coach Wayne Pitzer in the military mom's house.
You do the dishes.
I did the dishes.
Cindy, am I the only one here who thinks this isn't about the dishes?
And then, the unbelievable finale. The moms face their darkest fears and their fondest hopes, guided by famed psychic John Stephen.
One of these two spirits is going to talk to us tonight. And the mother who makes contact with her son, through me, is going to walk out of this tent $1 million richer. So that is one sweet spirit.
Just to remind you, I'm Carson Ryan Carr from VH1's Schmuckbait. This is the mother of all reality shows, and it's realer than a body bag. Dude, that's real.
We're not pushing the envelope. We're tearing it up. It's only a game, but it's more than just a game. Battle of the Military Moms. Fox Tuesdays this season. Unless you hate it. This year, go fox yourself.
And of course, this was the year of Hurricane Katrina. And its associated devastation and destruction. This week, as you may have noticed, there was an announcement at the White House, attended by New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin, but not by the occupant of the White House. Interesting, that the administration was doubling its commitment monetarily to rebuild the levees to the standard that they were supposed to have been built to before Katrina, but weren't, because they weren't. And so that story will continue to reverberate throughout the year to come. And I had nominated as my poster boy for incompetence in the whole Katrina disaster, Jerry Coletti of the United States Army Corps of Engineers, who, when asked why the inspection of the levees and the flood walls were so cursory, he explained that they didn't even bother to inspect the flood walls, which were, of course, the parts of the system that breached, because, in his opinion, the flood walls were the strongest part of the system, so there's no need to inspect them. I thought that was kind of a high watermark of competence, but obviously the rest of the nation disagreed. The man who's gone down in history, or at least this year's history, as the poster boy for bureaucratic excellence in the Katrina situation was former head of FEMA, Mike Brown. Now, of course, busily embarked on his next career.
Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you get the promotion?
No.
Not again.
He said he liked me, but my resume just wasn't good enough.
Oh, isn't there anybody who can help?
Hi, I'm Mike Brown, and the answer to that question is a big, loud yes indeed.
There's no reason you should let a poor resume stand in the way of a better life. That's why I started Mike's Resume Chalet. You go to a dentist to fix your teeth, so come to me to fix your resume.
Resume Chalet has a crew of trained resume writers. Their one and only job, to turn little ones into big ones, to turn today's lemons into tomorrow's lemon souffle.
I wouldn't put my name on the door and on the Bahamian Limited Partnership if these proven techniques hadn't done for me what they're gonna do for you. So, even if your resume's a disaster, I can handle it. Believe me.
Honey, did you get the promotion?
No. The boss liked my resume so much, he gave me his job. Thanks, Mike's Resume Chalet.
You can't go wrong with Mike's Resume Chalet because of the Mike Brown Guarantee. If your new resume doesn't get you a better job, a promotion, or a whole new career, your money will be refunded via debit card, available at a major sports complex near you.
I'm Mike Brown. Tell me I sent you. And don't let your past get in the way of your future. See you at Mike's Resume Chalet, the place to go if you want to go places.
Mike's Resume Chalet, cosmetic surgery for your career.
Ladies and gentlemen, just one dog trainer correction this week, because it's so darn good. An article in the real estate section about what buyers can do when escrow closes and sellers don't move out, centered on the story of one buyer trying to move into a home in La Cañada, Flint Ridge, based on the perspective of the buyer and her agent. However, the sellers and their agent were not interviewed for the article, leading to a number of statements that were not verified with the sellers and the seller's agent. According to the sellers, the delays were not due entirely to their procrastination, as the article portrayed. The article should not have been published without the Times verifying the accuracy of the statements and without the perspective of the couple who sold the house. You betcha. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the Year in Rebuke. The show returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, channel 136 on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hello, Howard. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. Available as a free podcast from kcrw.com. And it would be just like having a fresh new year to screw up if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Really? Alrighty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. And my thanks to the entire crew at Disney Concert Hall for making possible a thrilling experience for me and my friends this very week. Thank you all. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world now as never before as the home of the homeless.